BYUSN. How much will we really know about BYU football after the first game against Southern Illinois? We look back on seasons past to see just how much the first game tells us about the remainder of each season. And five-star freshman phenom Yegor Demin of BYU basketball makes his BYU Sports Nation debut. Why were the Cougars a perfect fit to help prepare for the NBA?
Ed Eystone joins us from Paris to preview Kenneth Rook's race in the steeplechase and what it means to have so many Cougar Olympians. And the first unofficial depth charts are out for NFL teams, and there are a few surprises involving BYU players. We'll react to that and so much more.
Surprise, surprise, and welcome to another live edition of BYU Sports Nation. The official, brought to you by the BYU Store, the official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. It is Wednesday, August 7th. I am Spencer Linton alongside a man who I know, before he dies, has to meet Snoop Dogg, Jason Shepherd.
How do you know I haven't?
Oh, maybe you have. Are you going to share a story that you've
met
Snoop
Dogg? No, I haven't. But you know who has?
Who's that?
We just mentioned his name a second ago. Ed Eystone?
How about this?
Coach Eystone met Snoop Dogg yesterday. In fact, we've got a little snippet of it. Huh? Check this out.
How you doing, Coach?
Nice to meet you.
So what?
Hey, you did a great job on commentary in the steeplechase at the trials. I had a couple of steeplers in there, so
that.
Thank you, man.
How awesome is that? Snoop,
get the
bless from Snoop Dogg
for his specific commentary in the steeplechase.
Oh yeah,
which BYU just so happens to have a few outstanding stars competing in the steeplechase.
Let me tell you, besides we've got that picture floating out there with Snoop with the scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
Now we got him hanging out with Coach Eystone. Just saying. Maybe we get Steve Martin to put in a good word for us.
Yes. It's becoming a thing. Snoop's relationship
cool
with
is that?
BYU.
How cool is that?
I love that Ed's there. It's cool on so many levels. One, that Ed got to interact with Snoop Dogg, but that he gets to watch his athletes perform on the biggest of stages. There's nothing bigger than the Olympics when it comes to track and field.
Yeah.
It is the pinnacle.
Yeah.
And he's got how many? Like seven runners?
Yeah.
Seven runners between he and Diljit Taylor that they're watching.
Yeah, and he's gonna talk about all of those coming up a little bit later on the show.
On that note, with energy high and our guy Snoop Dogg, an unofficial part of BYU Sports Nation now,
Let's do it.
Can we call him that?
Can we call him the unofficial entrepreneur of BYU Sports Nation?
Of BYU. A
little callback to yesterday.
Yeah, well, I guess let's go. That's plenty of reason to rise and shout and get to what's trending.
It's just so fun to be back here with the guys.
Really excited about what we've done so far in 24 and looking forward to this season. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Expectations for BYU still very high this year.
Day one when we go up against Southern Illinois, people are going to find out.
No, let's do this. What's Trending? Presented by Tim Daly Ford, part of the Tim Daly Auto Group, serving Utah since 1968. Today is a special day. It's Picture Day for BYU football and all of the media hoopla that goes along with it. They've got what we call the car wash happening in the indoor practice facility, where players will go from booth to booth, station to station, work with different media entities. And it's fun. You see a lot of personality in this. This is the day that you ask all the goofy questions. It's kind of like the Super Bowl media day of sorts, right? You know what I'm talking about?
It is, yeah.
Okay. Something that Snoop Dogg would absolutely love, okay? An invitation to BYU football media day. But with this picture day, we have to think, all right, we look at this team and say, well, how much do we really know about this team? And we probably don't know that much until they actually play a game, which happens in how many days?
Countdown to the Salukis.
24 days.
3.5 weeks, Jason.
Let's do this.
Until actual game. So we talked about this yesterday. And I'm excited about this topic because the more I researched it and went down a little bit of a rabbit hole, I thought to myself, holy cow, the first game of each season, really in the Kalani Sitake era, has been like this foreshadowing of things to come for the Cougars each year. And you think, well, that's an overreaction. It's one game. It's the first game. It is strangely tied to how the season goes. The question is, how much does the first game result indicate what will actually happen in a season? So, Jason, now that I have sent you down the same rabbit hole, and we're wearing our tinfoil hats.
Yeah. Thank goodness we're not
conspiracies.
Really wearing those. Yes.
What do you think? How much does the first game factor into what we can expect for the remainder of this season?
Yeah, look, this is an interesting topic because going into it, immediately you want to dismiss it. And look, there's a part of me that still wants to dismiss it despite what the data is about to tell us. Because here's what I don't want to happen, good or bad. I don't want to draw so many conclusions out of game number one that we completely get the wrong idea of what this team is capable of. And again, that can be good and bad. If they go out and blow out the Salukis, which could certainly happen, then you get this overinflated, you know, idea, and then if it doesn't keep happening, what was that? Well, obviously, you know, you can look at it that way. And then if they don't play well, like we saw last year, where you end up winning a game 14-0, you know, you start to make these assumptions that way. So I don't want to put expectations or limitations on them off of one game, but
do we need to?
Like you said, the numbers seem to bear these things out, that while it's not 100% accurate, the season openers do give you an idea of what is possible this year. And it's what we did, we decided to go look at the season openers just under Kalani Sitake.
8 seasons.
Yeah, so we're talking about going back to 2016 and what it means. And it's been kind of crazy when you think about these opening games and then look at what the overall records were,
yes,
how much they kind of mirror each other.
Okay, well, let's just count down. In fact, let's go back beginning of 2023 and go back to 2016, shall we?
Okay.
Obviously, last year, most of you remember well the struggles against Sam Houston. 14-0, BYU needed an interception in the end zone from Jacob Robinson in the fourth quarter to prevent that game from becoming a tie game. It got weird. Straight up, there were significant signs that the offense and the run game was going to struggle, Jason. I know part of that was injuries to Aiden Robbins, yep, and the offensive line was not really on the same page. It made Aaron Roderick say, it was just like there was a blip in the matrix. Like there are just weird things happening all over the place. That was an indication of things to come. Basically, all season long, the offense struggled. The run game largely struggled. 2022. Oh, BYU dominates USF, Jason. It was incredible. It was 21-0 before you could say it's hot in Tampa. But then Puka Nacua got injured. And that, too, was an indication of, wow, things are great when BYU's got...
when they're healthy.
Their weapons, and they're healthy. Not so much when some of those stars are not okay. Jaren Hall was banged up. Puka got banged up and missed a number of games. And it really manifested itself that, look, if you're not healthy, it's going to be a weird season. What happened in 2021, Jason?
2021, the season openers against Arizona. BYU wins 24-16. That was the year that BYU went 5-0 against the Pac-12. I think we've got the banner somewhere still in here.
And that score was closer than the game actually was.
Exactly. And then ultimately, that team goes 6-1 against P5 teams, and the record is 10-3. So you got an idea. They played very well in that game in 2021, and that then showed itself throughout the year as to how that was going to go. 2020 was interesting for, you know, a lot of reasons, but, you know, 55-3 is what the season opening win over Navy was. I think we all remember that game and just how dominating.
There were so many question marks going into that game. Like you said, super weird, eerie feeling. Yes. No fans in the stands.
Yeah, it was so strange. And then BYU goes, and in their margin of victory that year, over 31 points per game. They go 11-1. Now, again, strange year with everything going on with COVID, things like
that. We learned some things,
though. But you do learn things. Now, here, even after saying that, I want to go back to my original point, though. What I don't want us to do, which means we're probably all going to do it, is make all these assumptions, though, off of one game. Because, yes, it is an indicator. But if things don't look great, or if BYU looks like they're unstoppable, you got to realize it's still just one game.
Sure. I'm not saying this is a perfect science by any means, so don't mistake me. But it is probably more relevant than most people want to admit.
Yes, that's what these numbers and the scenarios that played out through all of these dating back to 2016, that's what it tells you, it's more relevant than we would think.
Yes, which is why we're doing this, to point out that for whatever reason, over the last eight seasons, that first game has had some strange ties to how things have then progressed from that point on. Even in 2019, people are like, well, BYU lost to a really good Utah team. Like, what happened there? If you remember, my friends, how many of you after the game were saying, man, if we could just get rid of those terminal turnovers, those devastating turnovers, the pick sixes. That BYU team had a lot of talent, Jason. But when they lost the turnover margin, they were hosed. Okay? And that was an indicator of, okay, against a good team, you're capable. But that team had turnover woes.
Yeah, and they had
turnover issues all year.
And they finished 7-6.
This is what I'm saying. 2018, road win at Arizona. Okay. 28-23, Arizona's not a good team. And then BYU beats Wisconsin on the road after losing to California at home.
Yeah.
So that was the Jekyll and Hyde season. That's really the one outlier in this whole list. I'm like, I don't really know what to do with 2018 other than they were a little bit young and unpredictable. So 18 might be the outlier and like, oh, there's a clear indication of what the season is going to be for BYU in 18, but every other year besides that. 2017, we all went into full-on denial mode, did we not, after that terribly hot game in late August? Portland State 20-6. Oh, Portland State's got some cornerbacks that could legitimately play in the NFL. And BYU's just breaking. It's okay. You know, Tanner Mangum and the guys are breaking in a new offense of sorts under Ty Detmer. They've had some nuance. No, Portland State was a terrible team. They won one game that year. That was an indication.
And BYU
was in trouble. They were
4-9.
And that's why after the Portland State game specifically and the Sam Houston game last year, if an FCS opponent plays BYU tough, Jason, I'm telling you, there's more relevance there, which is why we're all hoping that the Cougars come out and look sharp and play well and do some things to get the fans excited against Southern Illinois, because there is that PTSD.
Sure.
For two seasons now in 17 and 23 where it didn't go well against a team that on paper BYU should have dominated and didn't. Like there are some real things there that could potentially make fans want to either go full onto the bandwagon or be like, oh no, here we go again, 17 and 23.
Do not underestimate the fact that this entire offseason, this BYU football team has heard from the outside how they're not supposed to be good, how this is going to be a team that's going to win four games, struggle to get to five. They've heard all of these things. They've been asked all of these questions. I really believe they look at that opening game as a game to go out and shut people's mouths.
Make a statement.
And I'm so excited to see what this team can bring to the table in week one against Southern Illinois.
Already I'm hearing, well, Spencer, Southern Illinois is a good FCS team. I am not suggesting that they are not. Southern Illinois does have a recent track record of great success at the
FCS level.
They're
not a bad team, of course not. This is a good opening game.
They are playing in Provo.
Yes.
Against a Power Four program that has got a massive chip on its collective shoulder. It's time for BYU to make a statement and establish a precedent for this season.
Okay, but could that be what we see playing out? Making a statement, proving people wrong. Is that what we see?
Would that be the theme of the season?
If that's what happens in week one, could that be the theme that we see game in and game out? That we won this game because we wanted to show people we were better than what they gave us credit for.
Make a statement. BYU needs to beat Southern Illinois by at least four scores. Like they probably need to score in the 30s and win convincingly for everyone to feel like, okay, they've turned a corner. A 14-0 game, a 20-6 game cannot happen again, like with significant offensive struggles. That can't happen again, or else we need to give it real credence, like this might be troublesome. I don't want to go all in, Jason, but like, I'm kind of there.
24 days away. Well, no, kind of 24 days.
Even 2016, 18. That crazy win for Kalani, the walk-up, that was the team of close wins.
Yes.
They played 8 of the 13 games that season were one-score games.
And finished 9-4. They were 4-4 in the one-score games.
There are themes that will present themselves in game one that carry through the season. Just be ready. Our question of the day. Now that you've heard what we've talked about, have you gone down the rabbit hole? If so, how much do you expect to learn about BYU football in the first game of the season? I think there are significant lessons there that will carry through. Tana Chris on X says, a lot. A good BYU team should beat any FCS team by 3+ scores and put up at least 40 points. We saw in 2017 against Portland State and in 2023 against Sam Houston State, the poor showing in those wins, being a foreshadowing of the rest of those seasons. This is exactly the point
we're trying
to drive home here. You take the next one.
All right, from Storm Clock Saint on X, won't learn anything till they play SMU and Wyoming.
I could not disagree more.
Yeah, I think most BYU fans would disagree with that.
What we just laid out?
With the data that we just put out there, this game's going to mean something. It's going to mean something. And look, based off of what Bill Connolly said, it makes it even more important that you got to have a good showing against Southern Illinois.
He thinks, in some ways, his numbers anyway, that that's going to be the only game BYU wins in non-conference.
I just don't buy that. I just don't.
Make a statement.
Yes.
Make a statement. Hashtag BYUSN on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And guess what? They can. This team can make a statement.
If you missed yesterday's After Further Review, as the guys went through the schedule game by game, you can always find it on demand anytime on the BYU TV app.
I am so amped about what's going to happen next on the show. 5-star and the only in program history for BYU basketball, freshman phenom Yegor Demon makes his Studio B debut. Why was Provo the perfect fit for him? Stay with us.
This portion of BYU Sports Nation is presented by the Tim Daly Auto Group, serving Utah since 1968.
That BYU has not signed a guy like him before.
The first 5-star in BYU basketball history.
Yegor is really going to add to the group and to our collective play.
We are live at Studio B. This is your day-to-day BYU Sports play-by-play. I'm Spencer Linton, teamed up with Jason Shepherd. And we welcome in to Studio B for the first time, and what we believe will be the first of many times, the great Yegor Demon of BYU basketball. Yegor, welcome to the show.
Thank you guys. I appreciate it.
I've been practicing my Russian, I want you to know. Okay, so you have to assess how my Russian is right here, okay?
Yeah.
Я люблю basketball.
Oh, that's great, man. Hey, that's great. This is actually great, not going
to
lie.
I appreciate it.
Do you want
that.
To enlighten the rest of us as to what
it's
you just
simply,
said?
Simply, I love basketball.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to pretend like, I also know, я говорю по-русски.
The first one was better. I prefer the first one.
I appreciate your honesty. It's great. Hey, welcome to Provo officially, and welcome to the show, man. How has life with BYU basketball been?
Man, beautiful. I love this place, and I feel great. I feel great in here.
What was it that intrigued you about BYU? Why was this the place when you decided, I'm going to go play college basketball? Why was BYU the place you chose?
I mean, while we've been choosing with my family the university I'm going to go, one of the most important things was the place, if it's going to be calm, nothing dangerous and all this stuff. So at the same time, looking at the roster, at the coaches, and how's it going to be, right? So the ideas, the main ideas of the team. And all of that just became into, what it became to. So
as you look back on the recruiting pitch from Coach Young and the staff,
yeah,
what was the most impressive thing about what they presented to you?
I really like the idea of coaches, how they see me in the game and how they want to use me, because this is probably my main idea too, to be everywhere, right? Not just like to do one work or one position.
Oh, you want to play a lot of different
positions
on the basketball
court. I want to do everything, like either we talk about offense or defense. So I'm trying to do everything, trying to be efficient in every action in the game.
For those that may not have spent hours and hours on YouTube watching highlights and getting even more excited about you coming here, why don't you explain a little bit of your game and what your skill set looks like?
So, I mean, I think this is easier to say to you guys or somebody from the side who's watching me, but how I'm trying to play is basically I'm trying to make everybody better. So I'm trying to get involved every player on the court from my team, obviously. So, yeah, trying to be unselfish, talk a lot with everybody, trying to help people, and yeah, just be focused on the game and every action.
Yegor Demin is with us on BYU Sports Nation. Obviously, you and many of your teammates, at some point, the goal is to get to the National Basketball Association and play in the NBA. But as you watch NBA players, who do you admire? Maybe who do you pattern your game after that's playing in the league right now?
I wouldn't say I'm trying to compare myself with somebody, but I definitely trying to learn from some players. For example, as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Okay.
It's a little different type of player if you're talking about comparing, but this is where I'm trying to get. So, and obviously Luka, which is kind of the same trajectory as me, coming from Spain, and yeah, a big guard, and yeah, this is what I'm trying to learn from these guys.
Hey, SGA and Luka Doncic, those are two good players to watch.
Yes, not too shabby. Look, I would imagine with your goal being the NBA and to play at the highest level, you were on a trajectory that there's a chance you may have been able to do that without coming to college. Why was it important for you to come to the college game and go that route?
This move is important for me because in college I'm looking for a play time against guys same age as me or older, but not the professionals like it would be in Madrid, where it would be kind of difficult for me to get into it, right? Because everybody's like really old mans who's really physical. Not trying to say that these guys here is bad, but you know, the difference of probably, it just would be even harder for me to start playing there. Mm. So here I can get more time while getting good competition.
You're going to play in the Big 12 Conference.
Yes.
And
yes.
I'm sure you've heard a lot about it, but what do you know about the Big 12 right now?
Yeah, I know this is the strongest conference in the NCAA. And yeah, so many good players, good teams, and it's huge competition.
Oof. Yegor, what do you know about the Marriott Center? What have your teammates told you about playing in front of a crazy loud Marriott Center?
Yeah, everybody telling me this is like, I can't even imagine how is that. Yeah, but I'm really excited to get into the first game, you know, feeling that energy. And yeah, can't wait.
I know it's still summer, and so you don't have the full complement of students on campus, but everybody's so excited to have you here. What's been your interaction with BYU fans when they meet you and obviously being excited that you're here?
Yeah, I mean, I love when people just coming and, you know, talk to me. Not just because I'm trying to get attention, but just, you know, I love that people goes like that. That people here is like really open. They're trying to get to know me, right? And just even like just talk to me. And this is what I really like.
Now, I know your teammates are showing you around the state and Provo. They took you to ride some roller coasters little while ago at a nearby theme park called Lagoon. What has that been like, the theme park and the roller coasters and getting to know your teammates?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's a great time when you can just go and spend time together with your teammates, with the old team and some coaches, to build this, you know, feeling between each other, like chemistry, right? And yeah, it was great. I was scared, not gonna lie. Not gonna lie. It was my first time on roller coasters.
Any roller coaster?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I probably did some like Universal ones.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it's not really the same thing.
And you went on Cannibal, right?
Yes.
So for those that don't know what that is, it's you It's an inverted drop from 200 yeah. feet.
For that to be your first roller coaster, so what was more nerve-wracking? Was it the anxiety before or the actual ride?
It was actually, like, as you said, before, because when you get there, you just forget about everything at some point, and you don't really care. You're just thinking about stay alive. And
would you go on it again, or did you go on it again?
Actually, I would like to go again.
Okay.
We would go again, but we were late, so they were closing the coasters, right? So,
sure.
So yeah, we couldn't go again.
Okay. Well, you got that out of the way. Got the important roller coasters
yes.
out of the way.
Yes.
At this point, we're in early August. How would you assess the overall team? Like, how is the team playing right now together?
Man, I feel really good in this team. You know, like I feel like everybody knows what we gotta do. So, and the feeling between each other in, you know, like control of the game already is pretty high level, as I feel. And the impact of coaches, impact of older guys is priceless.
Mm.
Yeah. I'm really grateful for them, because everybody kind of trying to help me, you know, not only me, but all the freshmen, and everybody trying to, you know, help to each other, which is great. Yeah.
The players are not the only thing that are new with this team this year. Obviously a new head coach and a new coaching staff. What's your relationship like with Coach Young, and what does he bring day in and day out when you guys are in the gym?
I mean, I feel like Coach Kevin is insane. Like, he's a really good person, and you know, I'm trying to learn everything I can, as much as I can from him. So, you know, he has big experience in NBA, coaching all the superstars like Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and other guys. And yeah, so I'm really trying to be in contact with him, you know, and talk to him as much as I can. So, yeah.
Yegor Demin is with us on BYU Sports Nation. A lot of BYU fans are intrigued about your relationship and interactions with Travis Hansen, who speaks pretty good Russian and lived there for a number of years and was a missionary for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, obviously a great basketball player. How did Travis help you in this transition from Russia and Real Madrid to BYU?
He's one of the main person in this transition, because, you know, because of him, everything is much easier for me now. He's helping me a lot, and he always on the contact, so I can just call him and ask him for help. So I'm really grateful to him, because he's helping me crazy amount of everything, you know, like he just there for me every time I need.
Mm. What is the most exciting thing that you're looking forward to about this upcoming season? It's going to be here before we know it.
I mean, the main goal is to win the championship, obviously, and we're trying to get there for sure. And I'm sure everybody in the team is having this in their mind, you know, to work hard to get as high as we can.
All right, we'll finish with this. BYU fans obviously are very excited that you chose BYU and you are here. How has your interaction with the fans been thus far, when you've met them or seen them post on social media and things like that?
This is a little bit weird for me now, because I'm not really used to that. You know, basically in Europe, the fans are cool, but not as active as here, right? I mean, in some places, yes. Like in Serbia, for example, the guys are just like, these fans are just crazy. But yeah. It's cool to, you know, to experience this for the first time in my life, probably, when I can just meet somebody in the street, as I said, and just like talk to people, and they really like know everything about me, you know. So this is really cool.
Mm. While you're experiencing all these new things, have you had a chance to eat one of the cougar tails yet?
No, I didn't. I heard about this even before to come here, and I couldn't understand what is that. So I just hear about cougar tail, and I was like, what is this? You know? So I definitely gotta try that.
Yes,
right, we can make that happen.
There are a couple things you need to do before you play any basketball in a game. You gotta eat an 18-inch long maple bar donut, and you gotta ride roller coasters. So you've done one of the two, Yegor. Hey, it's great to have you on BYU Sports Nation. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks,
appreciate
Yegor.
It. Thank you.
All right.
If you missed any interviews, shows, or games, you can find them on BYUSN.com or download the BYU TV app to get all the BYU sports content on demand.
Up next, with the first unofficial depth charts for the NFL teams being released, we react to where some BYUs landed in those lists. And we play Big Deal, No Deal. This is BYUSN.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store. Official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to Studio B. I am Spencer Linton. He is Jason Shepherd. And in order to further celebrate 100 seasons of BYU football each day on BYU Sports Nation leading up to the season, we have been rolling out a very sometimes difficult trivia question. We've still answered the majority of them right. And now it's time for today's special from Colton Potter. Colton, what do you have for us?
All right, today's question. In a minimum of 10 meetings, which FBS opponent does BYU have the best winning percentage against all time?
A minimum of 10 games played against an FBS opponent, best win percentage.
So do you go immediately thinking it's somebody that you were in conference with so that you've had enough matchups?
So BYU has beaten Wyoming the most of any team, but they've lost.
But do they have the
a
best
handful of games? I don't know that they have the best winning percentage.
Okay, so I'm assuming, though, it's somebody on the schedule.
UNLV?
That's why the question, maybe.
I can only recall one time that BYU has lost to UNLV. But did they play 10 times through the Mountain West Conference days?
They would have had
to. They should have,
yes,
right?
100, yes, I don't think that's in question.
All right, so UNLV is an option. Has BYU played, have they never lost to somebody? New Mexico? I mean, I know
I'm going to go, I am going to go with the idea that this is because it's somebody on the schedule, and I'm going to say Wyoming. I will say Wyoming.
You think it's Wyoming?
I'm going to say Wyoming.
Win percentage.
Yeah, win percentage.
Is BYU undefeated against a team that they've played at least 10 times? Or have they lost, did they lose to everybody in the WAC and in the Mountain West Conference?
You got an answer?
I'm going to say UNLV.
Okay.
Ding, ding, ding. UNLV is correct.
Let's go.
17-3 all time. Wyoming is about seventh or so on that list.
Okay. Come on. That was tough.
Yeah.
UNLV.
Okay.
You know what makes this even more special? I got that question right on the birthday of our fabulous producer, Colton Potter.
Today's his birthday?
Happy birthday. Colton, can you confirm? And a second trivia question that I'm right about that, too. Today's your birthday?
It is my birthday.
It is his birthday. Happy birthday, Colt.
Have you hit 30s yet? Are you still in your 20s?
He's a young
I'm
man.
I'm not even sure he's hit 25 yet.
Let's roll out today's headlines. Birthday headlines.
There we go. Cougars in Paris update. Courtney Wayman finished in 12th place yesterday in the women's steeplechase finals with a time of 9:13. The sixth fastest time of her career. She was also the top finisher from Team USA. Kenneth Rooks races in the men's steeplechase finals today at 3:40 Eastern time. Rooks finished second in his heat in the prelims on Monday. We will preview the race with Ed Eystone in the next segment.
Can't wait. BYU football holding practice number 6 yesterday as fall camp continues. Obviously, number 7 will happen today and picture day. BYU quarterback Gary Bohannon and running back Hinkley Rapati. By the way, both named as candidates for the 2024 College Football Comeback Player of the Year. Very cool. And yesterday, the account for Topps Premium Seating posted photos of upgraded seating inside LaBelle Edwards Stadium. Just 24 days till the Cougars host Southern Illinois at LES.
Yesterday, NFL teams released their first unofficial depth charts ahead of this week's preseason games. There are a few notable Cougars who stood out. Kingsley Suamataia, listed as the starter at left tackle for the Chiefs.
Whoa.
Say it with reverence. Zach Wilson, second string quarterback behind Jarrett Stidham with the Denver Broncos. Jaron Hall, fourth string QB for the Vikings.
What?
And Tyler Allgeier, second string running back in Atlanta.
The women's volleyball team at BYU in the Big 12 preseason poll picked to finish second receiving four of the 15 first-place votes. Kansas picked to win the conference this year. Kate Pryor and Mia Lee named to the All-Big 12 preseason team.
BYU women's soccer ranked number 3 in the preseason United Soccer Coaches poll that was released yesterday, tying their highest preseason rank in program history. Jen Rockwood squad in action tonight. They are at Utah Valley. It's the first exhibition match of the season. In case you were wondering, there is no video of tonight's action, but you can follow the live stats.
All right, looking forward to the stat broadcast, Jason. BYU golfer Adeline Anderson Walk led wire to wire to win the Utah Women's Open. Second straight Cougar to win the event. She finished the tournament 11 under par, winning by 6 strokes. Domination.
Finally, BYU swim and dive head coach Tamber McAllister announced the hiring of 3 assistant coaches to her staff. Christian Hanselman, Melissa Springer, and Emma Lithgow. All 3 are former BYU swim and dive athletes.
Those are today's headlines. Now for a fast forward edition of The Whip, and we're going to play Big Deal, No Deal. To do so, Jason, start us off.
All right, BYU women's soccer, number 3 in the preseason United Soccer Coaches poll. Big deal or no deal?
It's no deal. Team lost 10 seniors and the majority of their starters. I love the number 3 nod, Jason.
Yeah.
No deal, though. This is a rebuilding year for BYU. I'd rather they be number 23.
Yeah, but it is a big deal because I don't think any of us saw this coming. So the fact that they start out as the number 3 preseason team, I do think it's a big deal.
Man. Women's volleyball picked to finish 2nd in the Big 12 preseason poll. Big deal or no deal?
I will say no deal. It's where I thought, and this is a team that's going to be at the top of the preseason rankings every year.
So this is a big deal for me because I thought they were going to be picked to finish 3rd or 4th.
Okay.
This is better than I expected,
okay.
So it's a big deal because it's better.
All right, my guy, Kingsley Suamataia, listed as the starter and left tackle for my Kansas City Chiefs in the first unofficial depth chart. Big deal or no deal?
How is this anything but a big deal? He's the blindside protector for Patrick Mahomes, the Super Bowl champs. This is a massive deal.
Yeah, big deal, but not unexpected. This is why they drafted him. They did not have a left tackle. They drafted him in the 2nd round to be the starter.
Yeah.
And he's been the starter from day one. He's been the first team left tackle guy.
All right, Zach Wilson, 2nd string on the Broncos quarterback depth chart behind Jarrett Stidham. Big deal or no deal?
I think it's a big deal based on everything we heard. I expected to see him 3rd on the depth chart. So yeah, the fact that he's 2nd, I'll take that.
Let's say this is no deal because it's been all over the map. Tomorrow we could find out that Zach's again 3rd stringer. He could be the starter for all we know.
Okay, how about Jaren Hall, listed as the 4th string QB in Minnesota? Big deal or no deal?
This is unfortunately a really big deal. This means that Jaren may be playing for a new team by the end of training camp.
Yeah, and there are some teams that are being thrown out there as possibilities where he could land. We will see what happens.
Give him a shot in 4th string. Yeah. Yeah, it's a big deal for all the wrong reasons.
It's a big deal because it probably means he's gonna want to go somewhere else.
For sure. After the break, Jason goes one-on-one with Snoop Dogg's homie, Ed Eystone from Paris, as they preview today's steeplechase featuring Kenneth Rooks and Saturday's marathon races for all the BYU Olympians. This is BYUSN.
Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation, live from Studio B. Yesterday, I was able to speak with BYU Director of Track and Field and men's cross-country head coach Ed Eystone in Paris right after returning from yesterday's races. We talked about all of the BYU athletes participating and what this type of exposure means for them and the BYU program. All right, Ed, how's Paris? I mean, you're at the Olympics, for crying out loud. How are things?
Well, Paris is amazing. It's 11:30. I'm sorry that we didn't do this a little bit earlier because I had a nice spot located right outside the Eiffel Tower. You could see it in the background and you'd be really jealous. But right now I'm in my cramped, unair-conditioned hotel room. But I'm still loving life because I just got back from the track and it was an amazing evening of track and field performances. And I've kind of said, man, Europe does a great job when they host the Olympic Games because we had, 80,000 people making a lot of noise during all the races. And I think the athletes were pumped. And as a result, we saw some otherworldly performances. And we had one of our own dear Cougars participating tonight as well, and Courtney Wayman. It was cool.
Yeah, we're going to get into some of those specifics in just a second. I do want to ask you a big picture question because, you know, this is something that going into the Olympics, we were talking about all of the BYU athletes that were going to be able to represent their country, but also BYU. From your perspective, can you put into words what it means for the BYU program to have so many athletes in this year's Olympics?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's been in this process for a long time, and, you know, we're all kind of building on the shoulders of the legends and giants that have preceded us, but it's just, it's fun to have, to come to a meet and see seven Cougars representing their countries, six of whom are running for the U.S. and then one for Canada. And so it's, you know, it fills us with pride, and we know that there's been a lot of work that's gone behind that and a lot of coaches, staff, administration. I think that's why we're all excited just to have this opportunity. It's been awesome.
You mentioned that you just got back from a pretty exciting race tonight. You mentioned Courtney Wayman. She finished 12th in the steeplechase finals earlier. How proud are you of her? And what was that race like to be able to watch tonight?
Well, Coach Dildy Taylor's done a wonderful job with her and Whitney Orton Morgan, who competed and finished, I think, 13th or 14th in the 5,000 as well. And to have two women make the final of these events and finish, you know, essentially 12th and 13th in the world is just amazing. And she's worked hard, and obviously she's built that women's program back to, you know, even higher probably than the days when Patrick Shane had, you know, won four national championships. So super proud of them. And the race that Courtney ran today, tough race, just in fact, we saw an Olympic record fall in the women's steeplechase and between the Kenyans and the Ethiopians and the Bahrainians, they just went out at pace, I think world record pace early on before they kind of settled down. And it's tough when you see that happening ahead and you've got to run your own race. But I thought Courtney did a great job just kind of running her own race and finishing up as well as she did. So, you know, making it to the Olympics is just so darn hard. And then to make it to the final, and then you just do the best that you can. And then sometimes it's almost out of your control when they go for super, super fast, times like that.
A couple of guys that we haven't touched on yet that I do want to get your take on. What's impressed you most about James Corrigan's run at the Olympics? And then what were your thoughts on how Kenneth Rooks did yesterday?
Obviously, James Corrigan has had just kind of a almost folklore type season in terms of him, you know, winning the Big 12, going to the NCAA, he's running great in the prelims, not scoring at the final, and then going to the Olympic trials and looking very good in the prelims, and then moving from seventh to third place and snatching a spot on the Olympic team, but still having to chase that mark, goes halfway, you know, goes the other side of the country and secures that spot. A lot going on in his life. And then he got married the next week. Yeah. And so just his whole story, amazing. They need to write a, it's kind of a boys in the boat sort of a scenario, if somebody could write that up at some point in time, because and the thing is, he's going to have other Olympiads ahead, at least a couple, I believe, and to do what he did, run as fast as he did under the pressure that he did to get here was amazing. Unfortunately, at the end of the day, when all is said and done, when you've gone through all of that, and I think this was his 12th steeplechase of the year that he ran because of his long college season, he was a little tapped out, and he just said, "Coach, I just felt dead." He said, "It was cool. It was a great experience. I learned a lot. The level of noise from the crowd was amazing and cool." But he was a tired boy at the end of that, and so he did fail to advance. But then Kenneth Rooks, who I felt like was really in the heat of death in terms of really, really good talent in in the heat that he was in, and only five advanced, and there were about eight guys or nine guys who had faster PRs than him going in there, and he just ran like, It was a masterclass, really, in tactics, particularly coming off of a little bit of slower tactical race, put himself up to the front of the race where good things happen in the front of the race, not great things happen in the back, especially when you've got 12 highly motivated people running for a spot at an Olympic glory. You've got to put yourself in good position. And then he battled well, sprinted well at the end, and got that second spot, his second out of five. And, you know, sixth place was about less than a second, I think, behind them. So really good. It sets the table really well for really going to, again, another very, very competitive day at the races tomorrow for the final.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the way you describe Kenneth, I mean, just nothing seems to faze him. I wish I had that type of mentality where things just don't faze me. I've gotten to know him a little bit, and that's certainly one of his strengths. I do want to ask you one more thing before we let you go. And I'd like to have you preview the marathon on Saturday. It's got three Cougars, Connor Mance, Clayton Young, and then Rory Linkletter, who'll be running for Team Canada. Just give us an idea of what you expect in the marathon on Saturday.
Yeah, what's really exciting for me is all three of those guys were teammates. You know, how we didn't win a national championship with three Olympians, I yet to really figure out, other than we had some good competition. But those guys are amazing. They're good friends. Rory is training down in Flagstaff, Arizona, but he came up during this training block for about 3 weeks and did some running with the guys. So they feel, you know, they know one another very well, and the training that they do is fairly similar. You know, I can't speak directly of his condition, of where he's at, other than, you know, he did some great workouts with our guys. And I think he's been well prepared by Ryan Hall, who was a Olympian in the marathon as well. But in terms of Connor and Clayton, I think they've done everything possible to and really had a nice build. It hasn't been seamless. And actually, the start of the build, we were kind of trying to make sure that they were 100% healthy, because the fact that they got the Olympic A standard for the U.S. at Chicago Marathon and then had to turn around a little over 3 months later and defend their spots by going 1-2 at the trials, well, that was a huge ask. Two big races in a little over 3 months, and they were a little banged up at the you know, after the trials. And you know, it took them a little bit. They each had, you know, Achilles or quad injuries, or, you know, little hiccups that they were working through. But once they got solid, I think they've had a really good 16-week block of training, which is what I usually like to have my marathoners do. 16 weeks is kind of the magic number, you know, the 4 months of just day in, day out, consistent hard training. And I think what I told them a long time ago was half the battle of this event is showing up on the starting line healthy. And we've got, you know, 80 of the fastest marathoners in the world that'll be gathered on Saturday. And I would say a third of them probably have a little niggling injury or something. So that knocks the field down to about 50. And I'm happy to say that our two guys are pretty healthy right now. So now if they can just, you know, execute a good race, then I like the chances of running better than what they're currently ranked.
Absolutely. We'll pass along the BYU Sports Nation karma to you, and you can pass it along to the runners coming up over the next couple of days. Thanks, Ed. Appreciate it.
Great. Thank you. Go Cougs.
Go Cougs indeed. Ed Eyestone in Paris. Hey, we're going to put a bow on today's show because it's our producer Colton's birthday. With our elite voice of the day, this is BYUSN.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation with our question of the day. How much do you expect to learn about BYU football in the first game of the season? A little more relevant than you might think. Our elite voice to the day, presented by PAX Healthcare Elevated, comes from Eric Evanson 22 on X, who says, more than I know now. Last year during the Sam Houston game, I learned a lot. This year's no different. blow the doors off the Salukis and get the right footing to start the year. Make a statement,
Jason. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what this team's goal is in week one. Today's, get the win, make a statement.
Yes, today's Rise and Shout Out presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics.
How about Yegor Dimon making his BYU Sports Nation debut? Had him in studio. What an absolute delight, by the way, to talk to. He was so nice.
He's an incredibly likable person.
Yes, very likable.
And an elite basketball player.
Yes.
Our thanks to today's guests, the aforementioned Yegor Dimon and Ed Eystone in Paris. For Jason, I'm Spencer. Shout out to the Krešimir Čosić family. See you tomorrow. Go Cougs.